Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I am Josh and I am joined by Bo.
Okay.
Hello.
How you doing?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Good, yeah, not too bad.
So we are going to be talking about social hierarchy. So what we're planning to do today is about, for the first half, we're going to talk about historic social hierarchies as a bit of formal evidence, looking at how they seemed to have formed, what they actually are, how they differ between cultures, what the conception of the hierarchy actually is, all that sort of stuff. And then we'll be discussing the underlying psychological phenomena which informs the mechanisms which enforce these hierarchies in human beings, because as we'll get onto in a second, these hierarchic structures in society tend not to just be exclusive to human beings, but we can also find them in other non-human primates as well. So there's evidence that there is a biological rooting to all of this, but of course there is also a social element because it varies between cultures. So of course the psychology element as well is unfortunately part of social psychology, which means that there's a healthy amount of Marxist nonsense, and especially because there's hierarchy involved, you get lots of Marxist interpretations of, you know, this is what the capitalist system does to enforce its hierarchies, and there's always a kind of a presupposed acceptance of the idea that there's some kind of injustice to hierarchies, which I don't necessarily agree with. I think hierarchies are good because they allow a society that's large to be stable, because of course early human societies tended to be relatively small and close-knit, everyone knew each other, whereas these formalized hierarchies allow people to understand who someone is and how to approach them, how to deal with them, even if they don't know them. And it's just a product of living in a slightly larger world than we might have been in initially, in the very early stages of human development. So I'm going to pull up a definition of what social hierarchies are, which is from a research paper which I mention later. However, you'll find that linked down below on the website. So, social hierarchies are broadly defined as a system of social organization in which some individuals enjoy a higher social status than others, specifically in which people are stratified by their group membership. So, there's an interesting thing here which I don't necessarily agree with, because of course, we can tell what position someone is in a social hierarchy, regardless of what groups they belong to, depending on what groups you necessarily define as informing the hierarchy. So, say you're in, apartheid South Africa, then perhaps you could look at someone and know roughly what group they are in by their skin colour, their race, wouldn't you? So, but of course, in a society where this is not the case, where your skin colour doesn't necessarily inform your social status, being able to look at someone and be able to tell where they place in the hierarchy or talk to them, it's more about who they are as an individual rather than which groups they belong to. And I think that the group aspect is something that is a relic of the kind of left-wing involvement in this field. So I'm trying to clear that up. I think, sure, groups are important, but I'm not putting the emphasis on them being the be-all and end-all like much of the literature does. So, of course, when it comes to hierarchies themselves, there's obviously an incentive to be higher status because it comes to greater access to material and social resources relative to the lower status groups. Researchers suggested that people who simply have faces that are rated low status receive more verbal and physical abuse, are more likely to be discriminated against in employment, and receive harsher treatment in criminal justice systems. So,
what's a low-rated face? Just ugly, you mean?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, there's a bit more to it than that. Like, you could rate someone as a bit more likable if they have more rounded features and sharp features. For example, yesterday in the office, we were looking at pictures of Lysenko. And he, you're just looking at him, you know that he's not necessarily up to any good. So,
it is funny how, sometimes or often, you sort of fall into what you look like. You know, you kind of do become what you look like in many ways. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously not always, because sometimes you get a really pleasant looking, personable looking serial killer. Don't you? Sometimes you get a very, very ugly, well, deformed person that's actually morally immaculate. So it's obviously, but you know, quite often people do end up sort of looking like what they are in a way.
Well, it's a curious thing that I've been interested in. I haven't necessarily looked at any research, but I think that people become shaped by the social expectation which people have of them. So someone has really sharp features, then you presume that they're going to be have a sharp personality. The face almost imbues a personality or character onto the person, and therefore that's how people approach them. And I think that, say, someone was had quite a doughy face, was big and round and looked kind of jolly, then people would be more warm towards them because they'd expect it in return. Even though that person might not be that way, it might push them in the direction of adopting that role, simply because you get more positive social feedback, particularly when it comes to people approaching others. If you can look at someone and feel like that there's a certain amount of coherence with how they appear and how they act, then you feel like you can predict their behavior. And if you can predict their behavior more easily, then it means that you're more likely to like them because you know what to expect. They're more familiar to you. And of course, there's something in psychology that's very well established, known as the familiarity effect, where things that are familiar are rated as being better liked, even if there's no objective criteria to weigh them between other things. It's just simply knowing something means that you like it more.
It is funny how the physicality, people's actual, what you actually physically look like, is really quite important. I think I've seen before evidence or data that basically just good-looking people, people's sort of symmetrical features, they're just much more likely to do well in an interview, just all sorts of things, much more likely to be offered help in the street if they're struggling moving a sofa or something, you know, all sorts of things like that. It does actually make quite a big difference, and on a subconscious level for a lot of it as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Of course. I mean, it's like those annoying YouTube social experiments, which were just basically attention seekers on YouTube doing annoying things. But for example, they'd have someone like an actor deliberately fall over, and like they would be carrying books or loads of pens and pencils or something that would go everywhere. And if they were dressed quite scruffily, people would be less inclined to help them than if they were wearing a suit. But I think the root of that is that people are more expectant of someone who is more scruffily dressed doing something like that, and also it's more likely to be blamed on them and their moral character rather than say the person in the suit. Obviously they've made an effort to present themselves well, and if they make a mistake, people are more likely to feel like this is something that doesn't happen to them very often. Well, this is a bit more significant for them, maybe to help them out.
It's funny how powerful a suit can be, because I'm actually quite preppy. I sort of wear a shirt collar just anyway, even if I'm not at work or anything. I'm sort of reasonably preppy, wear a blazer sometimes. And it really is surprising. If you wear a good fitted suit with a tie and cufflinks, they really, really do treat you differently.
Absolutely.
So if you're just wearing a t-shirt with holes in it and stains on it, it's surprising how much, because it's a bit of a cliche. It gets mentioned in a few different comedy shows, Always Sunny and Workaholics. I was watching some old Workaholics.
Both of those. Yeah, they're great.
Watching some old Workaholics just the other day. And it's so true, though. It's surprising how true it is. And then the other thing is, we mentioned that how your physicality does sort of play into what you are really like. So, for example, it's really harsh to say, but I don't care. Someone that's sort of got terrible skin, terrible lank hair, is really badly overweight, or something like that, wearing really terribly scruffy clothes, old shoes that are falling apart or whatever. You do think, you can't help but even on a subconscious level saying, well, they're sort of haven't got their act together, let's say, to put it nicely. And then it will turn out that that is almost certainly the case. And you see someone wearing a tailored suit, you know, with sort of matching tie and sort of a handkerchief and things. And you think, well, they obviously are very well organised or have got a decent amount of wealth or whatever. Turns out it's almost certainly the case as well.
Well, there's...
So these, it's like a, I don't know, how would you say it, like a self-fulfilling loop or something? I don't know.
It takes more forward planning, doesn't it, to present an image that's more positive. So there's a bit of revealed character there, isn't there? But to return to the suit thing, I've noticed that because I can kind of get away with, you know, I'm still relatively young. If I'm wearing like, you know, a t-shirt and some jeans or something, people treat me very, very differently than if I'm wearing a suit and jacket. Like, I can notice people will say, call me mate if I'm wearing like a t-shirt, but they'll call me sir if I'm wearing a jacket. Like almost reliably, like they don't really need to give away anything. And I'll be like, I know what they're going to, how they're going to refer to me as now. And quite often it happens where it takes me by surprise sometimes where they'll be like, oh, that's very kind of you, sir. It's like, what? I don't know.
It's like Neil Patrick Harris in How I Met Your Mother. Like, everything's better if you're wearing a suit or something. I know a lot of people, they say they feel like a dressed up monkey in a suit. They feel completely uncomfortable. I don't suffer from that. Worn suits for work for years and years and years and years. And I actually, and other people say you feel better. You feel sort of more important in a way wearing a good suit.
Well,
and that is also true a bit. As long as you don't have that sort of chip on your shoulder that you feel like some sort of dressed up clown, then yeah, again, it's like some sort of self-fulfilling loop. You feel good, you have sort of more confidence, you stand maybe a tiny bit more straight, people treat you a bit better with slightly more respect usually, and so on.
I think that when people say they feel uncomfortable in a suit, I think quite often that can also mean literally, as in they don't wear one very often, so it probably doesn't maybe fit them very well, but there is, that's being a bit too practical about things, but going down a different route. But no, I think how someone perceives himself is presented externally as well. If you're, for example, there are experiments where I think it's some of Zimbardo's shock experiments where people who were dressed up as doctors and nurses were less likely to administer electric shocks to other participants for as long as if they were wearing, say, a lab coat. How they dressed up informed how they behaved in the world. And although there are questions about the validity of that experiment in particular, it just goes to show that there is some kind of underlying effect. And I think that most people can see that there's something to that, right? That how you're dressed makes you feel a bit more confident. For example, if I'd bought myself a new suit or something and I was going to a job interview, I don't know why I'd be doing that, but if I were doing that and I had all brand new stuff and really pleased with how it looks, it's going to affect how I present myself. I'm going to exude more confidence because I've imbued myself with something that is visibly better in my, at least in my own self-perception, than perhaps something else. And I think one of the things that is unspoken about hierarchies is that, this is my kind of working theory, I'm sure other people have proposed it as well, that hierarchies are important because it informs things like meeting a partner and having children. Like, you want someone who's roughly in the same sort of sphere as you, and all these markers, particularly when it comes to things like dating and things like that, where if you come across as being high status, it's always seen as a positive thing. And I think that that's also part of the reason why kind of your kind of secondary school or high school, if you're American, school age children are so focused on hierarchy, because it's like the novel thing to them, the dealing with the opposite sex. So they're so obsessed with the social hierarchy because they you know, want to compete with one another to be seen as high status, because then they will get interest.
It's funny, actually, you should bring up sort of the American high schools.
Mm-hmm.
I am not a fan of the high school movie. Not really at all. That whole genre is, I don't particularly like. I don't hate it or anything. I just don't think they're good films. I was watching one the other day. It was just on the TV in the background. I wasn't really paying attention. I can't remember what it was. Anyway. It was the classic sort of 90s or early 2000s American high school movie. And the hierarchies in it, there were so many and they were so intricate. And And my experience of school wasn't like that. There was a bit of hierarchy, sure. Like some of the sort of the bigger, more athletically able kids were sort of higher, I suppose. But there wasn't that much, really. It just seems that the American high school, depicted in film anyway, is like some sort of crazy hierarchy on steroids, like a hierarchy gone wrong, gone mad. I don't know if it's really like that. I think it might be a bit somewhere. Obviously, not every single high school in America is the same. But, you know, like you look at the people like the Columbine kids or all sorts of school shooters are sort of profoundly pissed off with the hierarchies in their school. And maybe I was lucky that the school I went to just wasn't particularly like that. Like I say, there were some hierarchies, but it wasn't out of control and so very firmly entrenched.
Yeah, it seems like it's more formalised in an American school, doesn't it? Whereas in Britain, for example, it's more, it's not, there aren't these kind of tightly defined social groups that exist where you can be like, oh, that's a nerd, that's a jock. Like all of these, well, nerds still existed and I think they certainly still were the bottom of the pile, right? But it wasn't like, oh, you play football, therefore you're at the top of the hierarchy. There were obviously some losers that played football, some people who were quite popular. What you did and how you presented yourself didn't necessarily define it. It was more about how you presented yourself. If you were confident and assertive and you didn't take any, if you didn't take any disrespect from your peers, so if someone messed with you, you hit back equally as hard or harder, then people would respect you no matter where you really lie in the social strata. And really, there was kind of, at least in my school, there was kind of an undercurrent of your physical capacity for violence defined how high status you were. Although it was quite unspoken, it wasn't necessarily something that people talked about all the time. But if someone was known to, oh, they really beat up that person who we thought was tough, well, you know, better be nice to them, sort of thing.
They instantly go up in your mind as a bit higher in the hierarchy.
Exactly,
now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we have talked about this before, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah. It was like some kid that you thought was a pushover and then he beats up some other kid that everyone thought was reasonably hard.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he's jumped up really far, yeah.
And you can see this as well, because at the kind of pre-fight kid would have not had the same attention from the opposite sex as they would have got post-fight. They get a really, they get what would be considered at the time an attractive girlfriend, and then
maybe
after the fact. I saw it plenty of times where this sounds like we're telling school kids to beat each other up. Don't do that, by the way. That's not actually a healthy thing, but it's a very obvious manifestation of hierarchies that I think everyone can at least relate to. I think particularly in a school environment, there's low stakes for violence because you don't really have the ability to seriously hurt each other. You've also not really developed the full capacity to empathize with one another. So you're more willing to be horrible, and you're more self-conscious, and you're more interested in climbing the hierarchy. So there's like a huge combination of factors that inform why it's particularly ruthless, I think. But
in my school, it was much more just how personable or interesting and or funny you were in an interaction.
I think that's
more than anything else, even more than how good you were at fighting or if you're in the football team. It was a little bit like the football team or a little bit higher. But then there were members of the football team, like the captain of the football team was like so arrogant and annoying and obnoxious. He went on to be a semi-professional football player, actually. But he was the captain of the football team, but everyone, the whole year, thought he was a dick, really. And so, like, so his status wasn't as high as it would otherwise have been. You know?
I'm sure there's a lot more nuance in America than...
It just seems crazy, the American high school.
I think it's partly how the media portrays it. I'm sure we'll get people commenting just like, yeah, well, there's some element of that, but it's not as much, Shane. I think you are right, though, to say that certainly compared to the media perception is a lot more focused on the character of the person. And I think I probably over-egged the capacity for being violent. It certainly was a significant factor, particularly for men, which is probably why I paid attention to it, because I don't think capacity for violence amongst women would elevate them at all. It, in fact, do the opposite.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.